everyone, and welcome back to Moms After Bedtime. I'm Megan, and I am here with Brooke and our special guest, Lindsay Adams.
Hi. Hi, guys.
So, Lindsay is here to talk to us today about probably one of our favorite topics in the whole world, which is anything that has to do with therapy, mental health. But she's actually a child therapist and a mindful motherhood educator. So we are so excited to have her on today to answer some of our questions and just kind of chit-chat with us about the stuff that we really like to talk about and what we think is the important stuff of motherhood and parenting and being a better person, I guess.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, let's talk some wine and cheese. Brooke.
I'm going to start with my cheese this week. So my cheese is that tomorrow Shane and I are going to a concert in Boston at Fenway Park, which I'm obsessed with Boston. I love Boston. I love Fenway Park. We're going to see Green Day, Weezer, and Fall Out Boy was supposed to play, and now they're not because of COVID, I guess.
Do you know which one of them has COVID?
I don't know if it was someone from the band or if it was somebody from, like, their team. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Or if they were exposed. I don't know the details. I just know I got an email. And Shane was the one who, like, Googled it, and it said there was a positive COVID test. So who knows?
I was a big Pete Wentz girl, so just wondering.
I'm that's my tiny wine. Is like, it's not tiny. It's kind of big. But I'm just so upset because I was really, really, really excited to see Fall Out Boy, like, the most out of all of them. But, you know, it is what it is. And we're staying the night in Boston. We got an Airbnb, and I've been looking forward to this for so long. But my wine is COVID and all the new variants and the Delta variant and Lambda and all that stuff. Is causing
all the fraternities that Ryan was in.
Exactly. All the Greek letters. Yeah, I'm just super stressed about it and feeling a little bit like maybe we shouldn't be going to a concert right now. Luckily, Fenway's outside, so that's good. Yeah, I just feel like
it's so hard.
The freedom that I thought I had when I got the vaccine has been like ripped away.
Yeah.
And I'm not so worried about, like, Shane and I. I'm more worried about, like, bringing something home or bringing something to somebody else. Because obviously Shay is two and she can't get vaccinated. So it's taking a little bit of joy out of my excitement. I mean, we've had these tickets since June, which I guess isn't that long, but I don't know. Since June, we were excited to have, like, a night out in Boston, and now I'm just going to be stressed about it for weeks on end. Yeah.
That sucks.
It does.
It does suck.
That's hopefully it'll be okay. Hopefully we're going to wear masks, and I don't know what the seating's going to look like in Fenway, if they spaced, like, seats in between people or not. Hopefully someone behind us isn't, like, breathing down our necks with COVID. But, yeah, just kind of put a damper on it.
Your story reminded me of, at the beginning of COVID, I'm a huge Post Malone fan, which is very weird. And we got tickets
to
his concert. And it was supposed to be March 21st, and my birthday is March 20th. If you remember, everything shut down, like, March 19th.
Yeah.
So they canceled his concert, and I was devastated, and I still am. So that is my COVID wine.
Did they reschedule it?
Not yet. They haven't.
No.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
So just waiting. But my motherhood wine is, we went camping last weekend. That's my cheese. But I went down a water slide at this hot springs with one of my girls, and I got a huge, like, gash in my arm, and it made me think of just, like, the things we do for our kids trying to protect them. Like, I was dripping with blood in the water, and I saved her from, you know, getting hurt. So,
oh my gosh. Was it like one of those, like, really steep water slides?
It was like curvy, and it wasn't bad. We had gone down it before, but I don't know if we just like hit something wrong. But you know how you go up on the side sometimes on water slides?
Oh,
that
yeah.
happened, and we were coming back down, and so she was gonna like hit her arm, so I just put my arm under her, and then it dragged.
Ugh. Oh,
there is like a good 4 layers of skin that came off. It was gross.
That's gross. And then bleeding all in the water.
Yes, yes. But, you know, she was fine. She had a great time, so it was okay. My cheese was going camping and spending the weekend just without the stress of life in the mountains with my kids.
That sounds nice. We didn't go camping this year yet. Well, we have our girls' camping trip soon, though.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. It's nice to unplug, kind of, and...
Yeah, and be in nature a little bit, and then, it's nice. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys camp in the area that you're in?
It's called Hutopia. It's a glamping.
That's where we have our girls' camping trip.
We have a trailer, so it's not, like, camping. Yeah. Like, I'm not about to be taking a tent and 3 kids. Like, that's not... Does not sound fun.
Well, last summer we went camping, it's called Acres of Wildlife, and we tented with Shay, and she was like 1.5 years. And then Mandy and Phil went, and they had Isla, and she was about, I don't even think she was 1 year yet. But I don't know how it would be with like 3 kids.
Yeah, I feel like that would be difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't gone since I've had 3. I just went when I had my son, and it was a nightmare, and I was like, I'm never doing this again.
Honestly, outside of our friend camping trip, not a camping girl.
I love camping.
I don't like being dirty. Like, I have to have a shower, a bathroom. Mm-hmm. Then I can do it. But
I'm, like, disgusting, like, in my own filth for, like, 3 days. Don't shower till I get home.
I guess my wine kind of connects to what you're saying in your cheese, Lindsay, about just, like, getting away and letting the stress just roll off and all that good stuff. I just honestly feel, like, burnt out.
Mm.
And I feel stupid for feeling burnt out because it's the summer and I'm not working. But I just honestly just feel like I have so much on my plate. Just emotionally and stuff I have to do. And I think I share this, maybe not on the podcast, but my grandfather died, like, during the whole COVID thing. And they're finally having... a memorial service for him, so like that's coming up. Just a lot of stuff, and then right on the horizon, work is creeping back in. Yep. All the back to school stuff, which is fine because I think it will be a better school year than last year. So hopefully, fingers crossed. But I feel like this is the first time where I've actually felt like the true like mom burnout. Feeling
it's like literal exhaustion.
I just sat down last night and it was just like, it's not even that I'm physically tired, my brain is so tired.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like
when I get like that, I feel like even the smallest tasks are like so overwhelming because I'm just done. Mm-hmm. Like I can't do anything because I'm just done.
That's such a good way to put it. Yep, totally. So that's my wine.
Ugh.
And honestly, probably the whole, like, last week I talked about Eliza not really sleeping as well as she used to. I bet you that's probably part of it, too.
Because,
mm-hmm. I mean, even though Ryan and I switch nights, I still wake up and I'm, like, concerned about her, you know? So I think that probably has something to do with it. So hopefully it'll pass and... we'll get into a good schedule with school coming up and things will even out.
Mm-hmm. But
so it's probably good that we're having this episode with you today, Lindsay. Help me out.
This is actually our therapy session.
That's okay.
Thank you. And my cheese this week is, small cheese sort of update is that I picked a gym. If you guys have been following along with this saga of me having to find a new gym, Mandy texted me and was like, I feel like I'm watching House Hunters but for the gym. It was actually like honestly kind of fun to go try a few different places. but I ultimately landed on CrossFit. So I'm hoping that I'm not going to be one of those annoying people who all they do is talk about CrossFit and and all that kind of stuff.
If you ever flip a tire, you must record it and put it on your Instagram story.
We've talked about Megan doing that.
Because yes. I feel like that's the coolest part of, I've never done CrossFit, but watching people do it is flipping the big tires.
So. Yes.
Right, that's like the ultimate, like why you pay so much a month to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I will definitely be like lowest rung skill level there. But I think that's the only way I'm going to like learn and challenge myself. Yeah. So
you won't be there forever. You'll eventually like get better and
yeah,
get stronger and you'll move up and then new people will come in and they'll replace your spot in the low rung.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I don't know if that's my bigger cheese or my smaller cheese, but it's just a cheese and an update. My other cheese is that I got to see some old friends, actually, just with like life and then COVID and all of that stuff. I hadn't seen them in a long time, and I used to work with them at the very first school, the very first teaching job I worked at. And for the most part, we've kind of like dispersed, but I just like being with them because we're all different ages, and it's just fun to see people again, even though, like Brooke was saying, like now it's starting to get scary again, so it felt like, quick, we gotta get in and see each other and
before everything ends again.
Yeah. And my friend had a daughter like a year before Eliza, so we finally got them to meet, and our friends got to meet them, so it was just nice to see them. And oddly found out that through some weird whatever, Ryan actually, when he was a little kid, went over to my friend's house and like used her trampoline with his friends.
Oh, that's weird.
Isn't that so weird, because they lived across the street from each other, they had a mutual friend.
Oh my gosh.
And so Ryan's like, ask her if she had a trampoline, and she was like, I was totally the trampoline house. And so I'm like, you met my husband before I did, that's so weird.
That is weird.
But and that was in New Hampshire, not where we live, so just small worlds. But anyway, yeah, it was a good day and just cool to see old friends. But yeah. So, I'm excited to get into this conversation with Lindsay, but before we do that, would you like to just tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and maybe let us know where we can find you, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, my name is Lindsay, obviously. I guess you've said that a few times. I'm a child therapist and mindful motherhood educator. I have been doing therapy for 7-ish years. And I have a private practice here in Utah, which is where I'm from. And then I also have a podcast called Mindful as a Mother. And then, so mostly I love working with mothers and children to kind of take the overwhelm and stress out of parenting and to focus on more the relationship and enjoying the time together. And
speaking like to my heart right now.
Yeah, I know. That's wow.
In my personal life, I have 3 kids. I have a son who's turning 6 in a couple weeks, and then I have twin girls that are 3. So they're wild, yeah, but fun.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Awesome. This is something that I'm super interested in, and I know that we've talked about it before on this podcast. And like we say when it's just the 3 of us all the time, like, we're not really experts. We just like to talk about this stuff. So having an expert on is really cool for us. So we talk about inner child work here and there. And so my biggest question was, how do you parent a child so that they actually have a healthy inner child when they grow up? Because whenever we talk about inner child work, I feel like it's always about healing your inner child. But what are the first steps that we can take to meet those needs for our kids so that they have a healthy inner child?
So I think the first thing that you can do is parent yourself and work on healing that inner child, which is probably why the conversation goes there, because that usually is the starting point. And then as far as parenting, just making sure your kids feel unconditional acceptance for who they are and knowing that they're loved and worthy no matter what. And they're allowed to make mistakes, like have different likes and dislikes, all of those things. But it really does start with yourself. And I think a lot of parenting is the thing that brings out all of our issues, right? Mm-hmm. It is the trigger. So, but our children often show us the things we need to work on in ourselves. And then as we're healing those things, it helps us so that we're not passing that on to our children.
That's a great way to put it.
We always joke about how we're going to, like, fuck our kids up no matter what. And they're always going to end up in therapy. Like, do all moms feel that way? Do all parents feel that way?
Yeah, like, I feel that way, like, daily. Like, okay. I feel that, and sometimes I'm like, you're really going to need a therapist because I'm a therapist, so this is, like, worse, you know? but I think that's a normal human experience and feeling. And something that's very cool is when we talk about attunement. Do you know what attunement means? So it really just means, like, responding in a warm and positive way to your children when they need you. And as moms, we often think we need to be attuned like 100% of the time. We need to respond right away. We need to be there right away. But all the research shows we really only need to do that 20% of the time.
Wow.
And so even just knowing that, you're like, okay, whew.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
for the other 80%, the focus is on repairing after rupture. And that sends a really great message to our kids that if we don't have to be perfect, then they don't have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And that as families and in relationships, there's conflict and we work through things. So, and repair after rupture can look different, but usually it's an apology or spending time together or whatever, you know, it depends kind of what the rupture was, like whether it's you yelling at them or, you know, so just making sure that, like, you're being realistic and giving yourself grace in parenting. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps us with our inner child as well, because then we don't feel like we have to be on all the time. And so we feel the freedom to, you know, have hobbies of our own or do things for ourselves. And that actually helps us be a better parent.
Yeah. Taking care of yourself is important so you can be a good parent.
Yeah. And that having that secure attachment and the foundation of the connection is the thing that builds resilient kids. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they may need therapy, but I think I'm a huge advocate for therapy, so I think everyone needs therapy, you're teaching them how to handle challenges in a safe environment, and that's really the basis of, like, raising good adults.
Mm-hmm. I guess kind of going, like, talking about raising good adults, do you have, like, if you could give just one piece of advice to moms who are reparenting themselves while they have a young child, what would your, like, number one biggest thing to focus on be?
I have, like, a bunch, so I'm trying to think of, like...
Oh, you could do more than one. I was just trying not to put pressure
on. Oh, so I think the biggest thing may be, like, finding your outlet and support system, whether that's a therapist, whether that's, like, true friends that you can be honest with about how you're feeling about parenting, about struggles that come up, so that you feel like you have that safe space to work on yourself. And I also think working on seeing the issues that our kids bring up to us, like the things that trigger us that our kids do, and addressing those things is the fastest way to heal yourself, because those are your biggest buttons always. So, like, if your child, an example would be your child throwing a tantrum in a grocery store and you get, like, very upset, that's more of a you issue than a your child issue. Because your child probably isn't developmentally in the place where they can process and regulate emotions. Mm-hmm. But you're getting so upset because either you feel embarrassed, you're worried what people think of you, you're worried people are judging you as a mom. And then that gives you a really good indicator of, like, okay, this is where I need to work on myself. And then you can do the work that way.
Yeah. That's good. I feel like that, like, I'm working on that in therapy, not just with, like, parenting-wise, just, like, noticing when other people do things that might be a trigger for me, and then being like, oh, that's a trigger because of this, this, and this, and then, like, realizing, like you said, like, that's a, might be a me problem, not a them problem.
Right.
That's...
Yeah. And marriages are also huge triggers. So, like, if it's not coming up in your, like, or relationships, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the other big place where these things come out because they're the things that stress us out the most, typically.
Wow, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
That it can kind of be a dual, like coming from both, coming at you from both ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like a good question to come off of that I had was, how can I regulate my emotions when my child is overwhelming me or pushing my buttons and I'm trying to help regulate their co-regulate with them? Do you have any tips on like how or what we should be doing in that moment?
Yes. So take my first step for everyone when we talk about this is take a moment for yourself. Like very few things need to be dealt with in that moment, or do you need to like talk to them in that moment? Even if they're throwing a tantrum in a store, you can typically like carry them out of the store before you even say a word or like get them calmed down. So just taking a breath, thinking through it, and then getting to the place where you're like, I can do this. Having affirmations or mantras are really helpful. So I've created a few. Like my favorite one is, I'm a patient, present parent. And I just like maybe like say that to myself on repeat before I even interact with my child, because it's like, okay, I'm going into this as a patient, present parent. And so taking that time, and if you and children need the time to calm down as well. So if you need to take a time out, that's totally okay, so that you can go back and sit with your child and be in those emotions without being reactionary. And a lot of people worry like if they don't respond immediately, that will do damage. But it's actually worse to respond in a negative way than it is to take a break, because you're showing your child that they can take a break when they're overwhelmed with emotions. And then you can come back and have the positive experience.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I feel like just learning about gentle parenting through social media and like responsive parenting, I always feel like I have to always be there being like, okay, you're mad, you're angry. But like, it's good to know that walking away or saying like, mommy needs a break or whatever, can be better than actually being like right there with her the whole entire time.
Yeah. And so your child is going to look to you for feelings of safety and security. So you want to show them that you can handle their big emotions so they feel confident handling their own big emotions. And so if you're not in that place, like there's no co-regulating that's going to happen. So I always make sure when it's my own kids, they're safe, right? They're not like going to be like hitting something, hurting themselves, and then get them in a place where they can do something on their own while I take a moment to calm down. We love the Alexa in our house, so we usually turn on the Alexa and then I can like go in the bathroom, cry, take a few deep breaths.
I like that.
Yeah, no, it happens. And then I come out and I'm like, okay, and then we can talk about it. When they are in that state of mind and they're that activated, talking about feelings isn't really going to be useful until they've calmed down. So that's when you could say like, I understand that you are really frustrated, and that's where you can set boundaries and it's not okay to hit, or whatever that looks like. If they're like middle of the road activated, they may be able to talk about the emotions, but it's okay if you wait.
And I feel like that's, oh, sorry.
No, you're totally fine. I think the downside maybe of the gentle and responsive parenting community, it's great, but it also puts a lot of pressure on us to feel like we need to be like on and gentle all the time. And that's just not how life works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like what you're saying about, like, not being able to talk to them, you know, in the moment, I feel like that's so true for adults, too.
Right.
Yeah. If I'm, like, at this level, like, hyped up, and even, like, in, I don't know, say I'm, like, having an argument with my husband, I'm not listening. I'm not able to, like, I need a second before I can figure it out. So I feel like that's so simple, and I feel like I never even thought of it that way. Like, oh, duh, you need a second. Of course, your kids might need a second to cool down before having, like, actual conversation.
If you've ever heard of The Whole Brain Child,
or read any books, I want to read that so bad. I should do that.
It's so good.
Okay.
And so what it talks about, I'll just show you with my hand. But so I'll just describe it. I'm going to tuck my thumb in and cover my hand, or wrap my fingers around. So where my thumb is my downstairs brain. And this is like your survival brain, where all your emotions are. This is your upstairs brain. This is where like rational thinking comes in. Mm-hmm. The second the emotional part of your brain's activated to a certain point, this part goes up. So there's like no rational thinking, no decision-making. They call it like your smart part. There's no smart part. Like right. You just are in survival mode.
Right.
And so understanding that about ourselves is helpful, but also our children. And it makes sense why, like, if you say, you know, stop throwing things, they can't even think that through. They're just going to keep throwing things or keep hitting or throwing the tantrum.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I notice with my daughter, I'll do the whole, like, identify the emotion. And, of course, she's only two. But sometimes she gets, like, more angry when I'm like, okay, you're mad. And then she's like, yeah, I'm mad. Like, she just gets, like, more mad. And I'm like, all right. And then I noticed the other day I was, like, modeling, like, taking deep breaths. And she was like, no. Like, she was, like, yelling at me that she didn't want me to do that. Which then kind of leads into another question of, like, how to teach your children, like, those coping strategies that everyone talks about, and like how early can you start and how would you teach them, which is probably a whole big long thing, but briefly. Yeah,
it is, but there's some like key things you can do. So as far as like teaching about emotions, labeling, identifying, the big thing you can start at birth probably is just to talk about emotions, share your own emotions. Something that's also really helpful is pointing out emotions in other situations or in shows. Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is like the best one for this.
Yes.
Because they have all of like the breathing stuff, the mindfulness exercises in there. And they talk about feelings a lot. So you can say, oh yeah, Daniel's sad because this. Or Daniel Tiger's mom is really mad because they put sand on the living room floor. I don't know if you've ever seen that episode, but I was like,
I don't know that I have.
She's so patient. Anyway, but so just like pointing it out in other situations, even in like, oh, dad's feeling very tired today. Point those things, and it might not sink in right away, but right around 2 or 3 is when it does. And then also I would just make it a habit to practice the breathing exercises and the mindfulness skills when they're not upset, so that they get used to doing them. That way when you prompt them when they're upset, they're more likely to try them. If they don't want to try, that's totally okay. You could say that's okay and then let them calm down a little and then try. They're probably too unregulated or activated to be thinking clearly at that point.
Right. That makes sense.
Okay, so even, I mean, talking about all of this, this good stuff about, like, regulating emotions and, like, regulating ourselves and all of that, there still comes a time where we're frustrated. So is it normal to sometimes be angry or even feel like you don't like your kid in that moment?
Yes, 100%. I feel that way probably once a day. I think it's totally normal, and it's a normal emotion to have. And I think we as moms get to feel that. We typically carry the mental load of families. We have to sacrifice so much. We're doing our best to be present and patient. There is a time where you are going to have a bad day or snap or wish things were different, and that's totally normal and okay. And I think it's so good that if we have friends we can talk to about that, or support, to feel like we can be heard in that moment and not judged about feeling that way. Because what typically happens is you have that thought, like, I wish I could run away. That's what I have, like, frequently. Like, I'm just going to run away. Like, and just leave these kids here.
Yep.
And then there's shame about that. Like, oh my gosh, I love my kids so much. I cannot believe that I had that thought. And then we start to beat ourselves up about that. And so having that person to talk to can be really helpful in stopping that shame cycle.
Yeah.
Do you think, I think that connects to, like, my whine 100%, just, like, feeling burnt out. Because then I feel, like, my husband yesterday was like, why are you so angry? Or, like, why are you, do you seem so, like, upset or mad about everything? And I'm like, I just want everybody to leave me alone. And then I was like, but not, like, I feel guilty. I don't want Eliza to leave me alone. I love being with her, and I love her so much.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, I don't know. Like, how do we cope in those moments – where the mental load is too much and you do just want to run away and be alone.
First, I want to say that I think motherhood is like simultaneously the hardest, worst, most difficult thing in the entire world and the best, most amazing thing. And it's important to, and that's how the whole journey is. And it's important to recognize that without those low lows or those really difficult parts, you wouldn't be able to feel the true like love, gratitude, and appreciation that you do for your kids. And so it's important to have both. And when we're in those places, I think it's a signal to ourselves that we need to change something, whether it's we need more rest, we need to ask for more support, we need to let some things go and lower our expectations. A lot of the load sometimes that we place on ourselves is the stuff that we place on ourselves, like having all the dishes done, having laundry all done. Like, and some things are important, but not as important. So what I do is I try and say, okay, like what is, I call it like a red light. What is like an emergency? Like what is, there will be a consequence if this is not done tomorrow. Okay, I'm going to do those things, bare minimum. And then take the extra time to do something that genuinely fills my cup. It's usually a nap, but it could be listening to a podcast, watching a show. Sometimes it's, I'm going to turn a show on my phone while my kids watch a show, and I'm going to not feel guilty about that. I want to not feel guilty about taking this time to not be fully present with them and take care of myself, because I know that it will help me in the long run. And those little teeny things add up and can help us recover from being burnout or prevent burnout.
I
don't know if that was helpful at all, but I hope it was.
It is. It's such a hard, hard, hard balance. I was like talking about it with my sister the other day. She has an almost 1 year old, and we were just talking about how like you love your kid, but sometimes you just want to be away from them. And then like for me at least, it's like finding the balance of like spending enough time away where I feel good, but not too much time away where I feel like I spent too much time and now I'm guilt. I don't know, it's like this like cycle of like you said earlier, like the shame, like the like having shame about having those emotions and taking the time for yourself. And I don't know, I'm just glad we're talking about this because I think it's just not talked about enough, and people don't realize that it is okay to want to spend some time away from your child or have alone time or do things for yourself, I guess.
Yeah, and it's important to recognize, like, the time we're at in our world. We're in a place where if you have really young children that were born in the past, like, year and a half, or you have multiple children, depending on, like, your situation and where you're at, you may have not had the support that you were used to having before or that you would have had COVID not happened, right? Like childcare was shut down. A lot of moms and parents have been homeschooling kids and then, or been at home with them for, I think we're at like a year and a half now. Like it's a long time for the most part. And so that adds up, and that it can be a lot, like the burnout just piles on. And I think just recognizing that little small steps can be so helpful, so you don't have that rebound like mom shame. It's called, I call it micro self-care. So like small little things that are like low cost, low money, and macro self-care is important, like going with your husband to the concert. That's more like macro self-care. It costs money, you have to get a sitter overnight, all of those things, right? But having those micro self-care things built into our daily routines can really help, and they do add up, and then we don't typically have the guilt. So if I watch an episode of a show on my phone, I'm not really going to feel guilty about that after. But if I take a week-long vacation, I probably would. Yeah. And I'd feel broke, so that's what
about that. Yeah.
Then there's more guilt in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have an... I'm just curious about, like, the micro self-care, because I think that maybe sometimes we are doing that but not like allowing ourselves to feel like good about it. Do you have any other examples? Because I think it would be helpful to be like, oh wait, I actually really love to do that. That could totally be my micro.
So, and I think the biggest thing with self-care is it needs to be intentional. So like if I'm going to take a nap, And that's my self-care. I go into that being like, I'm going to take a nap for self-care because I deserve this, rather than, oh my gosh, I'm so lazy. I should be doing the laundry, or I should be hanging out with my kids, or I have so much to do. That it's not going to feel fulfilling if I'm beating myself up the entire time I'm doing it. So
yeah.
Okay. That's my problem.
Yeah. That's so being intentional about this is self-care. Sometimes making a meal for yourself that you enjoy, that is some has some nutrients in it somewhere, that isn't like leftover chicken nuggets, is is self-care. And sometimes that will make you feel better going forward. Getting enough sleep can be self-care. I love that you alternate nights with your husband, by the way. Also, going on walks, exercise if you like it, but don't pressure yourself if you don't like it. Reading books, podcasts, movies, baths, if that's your thing. So it's just about exploring like what makes you happy. Maybe it's a playlist that you love, and dancing around your kitchen, that could be self-care.
I love all those.
Yeah, me too. And I think those are all like so doable, and we just either put guilt on ourselves or we ignore them or whatever. On, of course, the Glennon Doyle podcast, they actually, like, the playlist thing, one of her, like, weekly do this things, probably one of the first few episodes, was to make a playlist that's just silly music that you brings you joy. I did that, and I ended up with, like, so many songs, and I, for, like, a week, I was like, yeah, these are the, I don't even know, just, like, stupid,
this like is Fall so Out Boy.
Not even. This is so embarrassing. Like, I used to really love Lindsay Lohan when she was singing like a singer. So I have like old Lindsay Lohan songs and whatever. But I was just like, oh gosh, this is fun. But then I, you know what? I made that playlist and I haven't touched it since the like two times that I listened to it. So I feel like that in like intentional part about the micro self-care is just so important to drive home.
That makes so much sense. And I feel like it separates, like, I feel like self-care can sometimes get intertwined with just care tasks. Like, sometimes I take a shower because, duh, I have to take a shower. But then other times I go in and I'm like, I'm taking a shower. I'm not listening to anything outside. And it's going to be long and hot. And, like, that feels like self-care. Right. Where my other everyday normal showers are just, you know, getting clean routine. My body. And it's not intentional. So yeah, that makes me feel relief, I guess. Like, I can do these things.
It just seems to me like you're just like filling your cup like a tiny bit instead of like you putting pressure on yourself to like, I gotta fill this whole cup, this whole 32 ounce mug by, you know, to feel better. But that's like, so who has the time or money or whatever to do that all the time? So,
right.
And then you're stressed about the self-care, which is not self-care.
So true.
Yeah. That is so true. What do you think, this just kind of pops in my head, when you have people sort of come to you about things about like mindful motherhood or anything like that, what's the number one thing that you get people asking about?
So a lot of mom guilt, like from a parent's perspective, mom guilt and shame and utilizing like respectful or positive parenting, conscious parenting, whatever you want to call it. They're all, to me, they're all the same thing. And then a lot of just emotional regulation stuff comes up just for the kids and for themselves. So how do I teach my kids to regulate emotions? How do I regulate my own emotions with my kids? Those are the most common, especially if you have people have multiple kids or like from two on, because that's when they start like having a voice.
Yeah. That makes me think of like, so developmentally, when do children really, cause I think a lot of us expect our 2-year-olds and our 3-year-olds to know how to self-regulate, which I know they cannot. But When can we expect our children to kind of understand their emotions a little bit better and be able to access like coping strategies and that sort of thing?
So self-regulation starts with co-regulation. And so co-regulation, I would say till about 8 or 9, just based on like development of the brain. around nine, I think they still need some prompting. Like, you try a skill, do this, but it's a little bit easier for them mm-hmm. to regulate. It kind of depends, because some children are ahead of others. Mm-hmm. So don't feel bad if you have, like, a 10-year-old that's not regulating. Different times for different kids, but usually around that time developmentally.
That's so interesting, because I feel like we expect 8, 9, 10-year-olds to be able to deal with, like, big emotions, and I think it's important for people to realize that they're not always there yet with their brain. It's their brain development, not so much their choice, you know? I feel like a lot of people see tantruming and stuff like that as, like, right, a choice and not a developmental thing.
When you guys were saying that, and even when you're talking about, like, 9, 10-year-old, I know I'm not an expert on, like, neurological stuff, but just working with high school students, they're still learning how to regulate their emotions. and people always say to me, ugh, how can you work with high schoolers? And you just have to look at it as a way, in the way of, this is the first time that they're dealing with big things. Mm. And I think if you look at it from that point of view and see that they're just kind of little kids who are still trying to figure out how to regulate their emotions and how to feel about things and how to cope, just in bigger bodies, I just think that that's... I know we kind of don't talk about older kids a ton because we don't have them as our own children, but I think that that's a point that I think is so important, thinking about older kids and just in my experience with them. So that's interesting.
And it's so important to remember that their brain's not fully developed till they're like 22, 23. Like, that prefrontal cortex, which is like the smart part of your brain, isn't fully developed till then. So, and I think we look at teenagers because they're in sometimes adult bodies.
Like, oh, yeah.
I have some clients that are like 6'4". I'm like, you are a grown man. You are not a right.
Full beard. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So we look at them and we think that they should have that level of functioning, and they just don't. And then we're in this generationally, we weren't really taught how to express our emotions as kids for the most part, because our parents weren't taught, and it's not their fault, but we grew up in that it's not okay to cry, just get over it, don't worry about that. And so for the first time, we're navigating how to teach our kids to do that, and it's very messy and imperfect because we're learning to do that ourselves at the same time.
Yeah, for sure.
That's such a good point.
Which then I feel like brings us into a question I had about, like, what to do when somebody comments on the way that you might be parenting. I know, like, our parents and older generations, like you said, their go-to is like, oh, stop crying, don't do that, you're fine, you know, kind of brush off the emotion piece. So what should we be doing, like, or do you have suggestions of things that we can say to people who might be like, why are you, you know? I feel like it feels like for me at least, it feels like I'm coddling my daughter or, like, being over responsive, even though I'm just responding. Sometimes I get, like, embarrassed out in public that people might think I'm, like, babying her, even though she's 2. But I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I think it kind of depends on the person. So if it's, like, a stranger in Target, you probably just are going to ignore them or be like, okay, whatever, lady. But if it's your parents or someone that's important to you, I think it's just important to express, not in the moment, so when things have calmed down, maybe why you parent the way you do and why you feel like your parenting method is effective, and say, like, thank you for supporting me in that, like, period. Like, so, because you don't owe anyone an explanation for your parenting, even your own parents. Like, you don't owe anyone an explanation for that. And so just saying, like, or you could just simply state, like, we do things this way. We allow her to express her emotions, and then we deal with talking about it later or consequences later. And And some, it kind of just depends on the person. So if it's more of an argumentative person, I like to just like shut it down immediately and just like, thanks for understanding. So there's no like, I don't really want to hear your feedback. This is why I'm doing it this way. Yeah. But I think a lot of it is like that we don't always feel confident in ourselves as mothers. And so when there's a spotlight on our children's behavior and us parenting that, we can feel really insecure and vulnerable.
Yep.
Because our motherhood is so sacred to us anyway. And so it's part of that is like feeling confident in your ability to mother your child and that you're parenting the way that you want to.
Yeah.
So working on that in yourself, but also being able to like verbalize and set boundaries in a kind way.
Yeah. You just like totally explained. Yeah. Again, yeah. This is our therapy session. That was like therapy for me. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I'm really not super confident.
Well, but that's so true that just, I think why motherhood is sometimes just feels like a lot or like the mental load or whatever is because you said it. It's sacred to us, and it's like, wow, but that's just it's that powerful that of course we're gonna feel inadequate sometimes, and yeah,
for sure. Yeah, and there's so much writing on it, right? There's so much pressure to do this a good way, the correct way for my kids to feel loved, and at times we feel very insecure in our ability to do that. And so that's where like I think burnout and wanting to run away comes in, because we feel like, oh gosh, I'm not doing a good enough job, or I'm not able to handle all of these things that are coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, that was helpful.
Yeah.
So do you want to let us know where we can find you on Instagram? I love your content and seeing all that you're posting, and it's just so helpful.
Yeah, so I'm at Linds, LINDS underscore Adams, LCSW. And I have a free download called It's Okay to Cry, and it's about teaching your child how to express emotions. And then I'm launching a course called Coping for Kids, Teaching Your Child to Manage Difficult Emotions Without the Meltdown. And that's coming out September 14th. So there's a lot of that, like that co-regulation piece we talked about, regulating your own emotions, how to teach different mindfulness skills. If your child struggles with a certain thing, like mine specifically had some dental trauma, so struggles with the dentist, how I manage that and how you can too. So.
That'll be handy, because my daughter has some, we talked on last week's episode that she is petrified of the doctor. Because she had so many COVID tests, and now she's just traumatized.
Yeah, she doesn't want something stuck up her nose now. Yeah. Like, she's like, I can't do this.
Yeah. I don't blame her. It sucks. But still.
Yeah.
Oh, those would be awesome resources. You said September 14th that resource will be.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, they're the free ones up there now. And then there's information in my podcast episodes as well, kind of sprinkled throughout. And then the full course will be available on September 14th.
And your podcast is called, I know you said it at the beginning, but just so everyone has a reminder.
It's Mindful as a Mother.
Mindful as a
Mother. And it is on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
Cool. Great. Crossover episode. I love it.
Yeah.
I'll have to have you guys come on my podcast.
Yeah. We don't really have expert advice, but, you know, we'll come join.
We're just three schlubs
over
here.
I've had a bunch of, like, real moms. Like, I like to talk to, like, real moms, though. Yeah. Like, I talk to therapists all the time. They're boring to me. Like, I want to talk to a real mom.
We're the opposite. We're like, each other.
Please, gross. All the therapists come to us.
We would love to. Yeah, do a true crossover and come.
Yeah, let's
do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. So that's where you can find Lindsay. We are so happy to have her on this episode.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, very helpful stuff and a nice therapy session for Brooke and I. I hope that you, in the car, in the shower, wherever you're listening to this, folding laundry, whatever you do while you podcast, I hope that it was a little bit of a therapy session for you, too. As always, rate, review, subscribe, and follow, I think, is Spotify. And follow. Interact with us on Instagram, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.